20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast with the Three Musketeers. I am Trevor Jossart, joined by Josh Zirkle and Steve Perhatch. How are we doing today, guys?
I'm a musketeer now. I'm doing great. How are you, Steve?
Well, you know, besides being compared to one of the worst candy bars on the world, I'm doing pretty good.
Oh, my God. Three Musketeers are great. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be a debate for another day. I had one today, actually.
Nougat no, all day.
All nougat and chocolate. No, thank you.
Yes.
Hard pass.
What's the one with the nougat and the peanuts and the caramel? Is it Milky Way? Milky Way is like the deluxe. It's like the deluxe Three Musketeers. It's like 5.5 Musketeers. When you do the math.
I mean, you're picking a worse candy bar now. I don't know. I don't understand what's happening.
Oh my God. They're all terrible. I mean, it's just hunks of chocolate. Like, what do you want? What's a good candy bar for you, Steve?
I'm a traditionalist. I love a good Snickers bar.
Oh, no.
All right. Enough of the
moving on.
On to Packers. The Packers did have a sweet pickup today. Let's dive into it right away. Signing cornerback Bashaud Breeland. He was a free agent after failing a physical with the Carolina Panthers. I believe it was a 3-year, $25 million deal that he basically does not have anymore, and the Packers got him for a 1-year deal. A lot of reactions right off the bat, especially with how the defense has played in the first couple of weeks. And what I'm hearing, Josh, is a lot of good things. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous pickup for a guy that, you know, surprisingly was still out there. You mentioned the failed physical back in March, and this was going to be a big money guy, a big free agent signing for a team in Carolina that was still recovering from the Josh Norman's departure in a lot of ways. And for him to just be available when Devon House goes on injured reserve, I think it's tremendous, a tremendous pickup from Brian Gutekunst, who again showing some flash in the front office. Steve, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, he's making his mark. He's not Ted Thompson, and I think fans are really going to appreciate the fact that he went out and saw with Devon House going on the IR. That's a big loss. I mean, I know he didn't play great, but he's still one of their five cornerbacks, and now they're down him. They're down Kevin King. We'll see how soon he's getting back. But adding Breeland, 26-year-old corner who was due to make $8 million a year, I mean, That's some decent money, so I'll be intrigued to see what the money comes in at for the 1-year deal. But all things considered, that's a hell of a pickup in week 3 of the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just looking at some quick stats on Breeland over his first 4 seasons with Washington: 60 pass deflections, 8 interceptions, 7 forced fumbles, and 211 tackles. So it kind of looks like he can do it all in the passing attack. He can lock down and cover, and he can get up and make a play in the run game. And this is the type of player I think the Packers need. I remember just back in our previous conversation, the last time we were on, we were talking about the Bears game and how a lot of these linebackers in secondary for the Packers were over pursuing and just missing tackles and allowing Jordan Howard at the time to get 9-10 yard runs. So I agree with a lot of the Packer fans. I agree with you guys. I think this was a good signing.
Yeah, it's going to be neat to see what happens. You know, and I know we're barely a month into the season, but fresh legs, you know, a guy coming in who's going to give a little bit of burst on defense, too. I think that's going to be neat to see.
So we have the Packers facing the Bills this weekend. And I'm sure you guys saw the whole ordeal with the Bills on Twitter about traveling 900 miles and landing in Madison, Wisconsin, and everyone was making fun of them, and Vikings were having fun with them, and they go ahead and just blank the Vikings. I don't know if this was a sign of the Bills maybe figuring it out. I doubt it. Or maybe the Vikings just looking ahead because they have the Rams this week on Thursday. Steve, are you at all worried about the Bills this weekend, especially after the way the Packers looked against the Redskins? I wouldn't say the Redskins are an overpowering team whatsoever, but is there any thought that the Packers could come out and lay an egg too?
I mean, obviously it's possible. We just saw it. So I'm not going to say no, it's not possible, but I feel like, you know, coming off of a loss, coming back, there'd be home. I feel pretty comfortable that they'll be okay coming back. It's, I think the biggest thing for me, worry-wise, is if you watched any of that Bills game, they had an unbelievably smart game plan for Josh Allen. They didn't ask him to throw the ball down the field a lot. They ran curl routes. They ran swing routes. They had him check out of things. They had him get rid of the ball quickly. All sorts of smart schemes. I know it's a foreign concept to the Green Bay Packers, but schemes to get guys open and schemes for their quarterback to make smart plays, quick plays, and get the ball out of his hands. So one thing that worries me is the missed tackles, because if you get the ball out quick, you have a higher percentage chance of completing the ball, and you've got guys in the open field. And the Packers proved so far they haven't been able to make all of those tackles, which for me, that's the big worry.
Yeah, for me, it's the defensive side of the ball for the Bills. I mean, this is a good, talented group. It's a talented unit on all three levels. Their D-line is very good and has been for some time. And McDermott has really just kind of been supplanting that talent. They are starting a couple rookies. That's a concern as well. But when you take an offense in Minnesota, granted, they're missing Dalvin Cook, and they had a lot of other injuries on both sides of the ball as well. And you shut them down for three quarters and almost four quarters, really. You've got to look at that and think to yourself, all right, we got to give Aaron Rodgers time. We've got to get our running backs going. And that's not going to be an easy thing to do against a defensive unit that, granted, got lit up by Phillip Rivers a couple weeks ago, but has done a good job of seizing the moment here and trying to get this team and this organization back on track. Coming off a big win against Minnesota, there's no reason to think that they won't try and keep it going against Green Bay.
Now, looking at the Packers' body of work so far, I heard this on the radio the other day, too. The Packers are one of maybe a couple teams in the NFL that you could say their record could, you could argue their record could go one way or the other. You could say the Packers could realistically be 3-0 right now, but you could also say they could be 0-3. You look at the Bears game, the Bears blew that one, and then you look at the Vikings game and I don't even know what to call it, a terrible roughing the passer call by Clay Matthews gave the Vikings another chance, and we all know that ended in a tie. I wouldn't say the Packers should have won against the Redskins, but I mean, there are certainly opportunities there. But the reason I bring that up is looking at that game-changing play against Minnesota with Clay Matthews, we did see another roughing the passer on Matthews in the Washington game, and then a lot throughout the league. And this week, we're seeing it all over social media. Players are now standing up and speaking their thoughts on how, I don't know, we want to call it soft, the league is becoming. What do you guys think the state of the NFL is? What's going to happen? Is anything going to happen? And do the players need to adjust? Does the NFL need to do something? I know this is kind of a broad topic, but I mean, I think it's something that needs to be discussed. Josh, what do you think?
Well, the players are going to adjust, in my opinion, but not in the way that Roger Goodell and Al Riveron expect them to. And I'm not the first person to say this, but a guy like Clay Matthews, a guy who has done a good job of avoiding contact with the head, tackling in the midsection of the body, and having the audacity to finish that tackle and then still getting flagged for it anyway, he's going to look at that film and he's going to say, well, if I get 15 yards for hitting him in the head and I get 15 yards for hitting him in the midsection, I'm just going to go ahead and pop him, get my money's worth, and try and take him out of the game. And I'm not trying to suggest that Clay Matthews is a dirty player. What I'm saying is there's not going to be any incentive to play, for lack of a better way to put it, cleanly, for to play in a way that's going to protect the quarterback. And we looked, you watched the Monday night game, Cam Hayward leaves his feet, falls into Ryan Fitzpatrick's knees, and they picked that flag up. And that flag, I think, had an impact on that game. Just as much as that no flag, rather, just as much as Clay Matthews, his hit had on that Minnesota game, that call. So we said this. Steve said this at the beginning. I'm sure Steve has been saying this for years. I've been saying this for years. This is killing the game, because now instead of watching two teams, we're watching a bunch of referees throw hankies around. And then when we can't understand what they're saying, there's another older guy that's not old, that young enough to run around on the field anymore, that has to explain everything to us. So we're not watching teams anymore. We're watching legislation happen. And I'm sick of it. I'm ready to cancel Sunday ticket. I'm ready to bow out and just start playing ball with my kids because it's not fun to watch anymore, Steve. I imagine you feel the same way.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for me, too, is the wild inconsistency of it.
Yes.
I mean, Daron Payne goes and throws, gets a sack on Rodgers, but throws him face first into the dirt, the slam that they were talking about. But apparently he couldn't see it. I'm sorry, there's five officials on the field and nobody saw that. I find that hard to believe. So it's the wild inconsistency that really gets to me. I don't know. I don't think that they're going to change. I really, unfortunately, don't. I think this is something the players are going to have to adapt to. Maybe in the offseason, like I saw the rumors around, going around today that the competition committee is going to have a conference call that they're going to be talking about this on because some of them aren't happy with the way that things are going. And that's good that they see that, but I'll be shocked if they make a mid-season change to this type of rule.
Right.
I think this is something that the players are going to have to get used to. They're going to have to start going after the ball more. It's just something you have to get used to. Like nobody liked the catch rule for 2-3 years because nobody could understand what the hell was happening. And eventually they changed that, but they didn't go in the middle of the season and be like, hey, everybody's complaining on Twitter about the catch rule, so we should change that right now. No, that happens in the offseason. So I think at least for this season, we're kind of stuck with it. Hopefully they'll cut down because right now they've had through 3 weeks, there's been 34 roughing the passer calls. That's double the past 2 years. So we're on pace to go for over 190 some roughing the passers this year. So, I mean, honestly, buckle up and get used to it.
It's funny you bring up the inconsistent. Well, not funny, just an observation. The whole point of this change basically is for player safety. And I guess the quarterback is a little bit more valued position and you got to watch it more. But I was listening to Dan Patrick today and they obtained an audio clip from last night's Monday night game. I'm sure many of you guys saw the stiff arm by, I think it was Vance McDonald.
Yep.
So what they did is they played the clip of McDonald stiff arming Chris Conte. I'm sorry, I take that back. They interviewed him after the game and asked him about it. And like, is that what you're looking for to do? Like, what were you thinking of that play? And McDonald says he wanted to inflict as much pain as possible and he wanted to take him down with as much force as he could. Then they went on to play another clip by Gerald McCoy, I think that was, for the Buccaneers, sacking Roethlisberger. And I kid you not, during the sack, and I didn't watch the game, I don't know if anything was called, but I kid you not, during the sack, McCoy yelled, "My fault, Ben," as he was tackling him. He apologized for sacking the quarterback.
I believe he tried to help him up as well.
Okay, exactly. So yep. These players are already cognizant of how they need to act in the game. But there's such an inconsistency. Conte could have easily got a concussion. Not if it weren't for the hand, it could have been how he landed or anything like that.
Sure.
But no one bats an eye. So I guess there's really no follow-up answer I'm looking from you guys here. Just more of an observation. But just the thought of that, it just really shows that there's something going on and it's not pretty.
There's no forethought to it at all. And, you know, just to piggyback on something that Steve said, when you don't know what a catch is, like guys understand how to catch a football. But when you have defenders going to their coaches and asking, like, how am I supposed to tackle him and not get a foul? I like the way Booger McFarland put it. Like, basically, a defender would have to go into the matrix once he hits the guy and he's just supposed to magically, like, roll off to the side. Like, he's just supposed to shift his momentum like Jason Statham in Transporter 3. It doesn't work that way. And they had their noses up in the air. Everybody – and Tessitore, who I think has done a pretty good job, is just being a company shill talking about, well, this is a point of emphasis this year. What the hell does that mean? That doesn't mean that it's rooted in any sort of logic at all. You're expecting a guy to tackle a quarterback and then magically just bounce off of him. If we're going to do that, let's just play two-hand touch on the quarterback and get it over with.
Yeah, I mean, and the problem, too, you saw what happened in Miami. We have defensive ends, linebackers that are trying to figure out how to not tackle and not land with all their weight while tackling somebody. How stupid that sounds, I know. William Hayes, defensive end for the Miami Dolphins, tore his ACL because he's trying not to land with all of his weight on the quarterback. Yep. So I get it. Look, the quarterbacks drive this league. We saw the Packers play last year without Aaron Rodgers, and it sucked. So I guess I don't know. Like, it sucks that they're doing this. I don't like it. I understand the concept of what they were trying to do. They just went about it thinking that if we say we'll start calling more roughing the passers, that it will just make the product better. The quarterbacks will be healthier, all that stuff. It's just
no.
As you said before, it wasn't well thought out. It was just a knee-jerk reaction to try to solve a problem of Aaron Rodgers got smoked last year and driven into the ground. So let's tell people they can't land on the quarterback. It doesn't work. It's not football.
Yeah, and it's going to continue to be complained about all season. And like you said, nothing's going to change midseason. These players need to adjust. And I fully anticipate it altering a few games here and there, just because if it's not going to be the penalty, it'll be a player maybe not going 100%, and maybe it doesn't result in a sack when it should have, and something happens. I don't know, but it's definitely changing the game. Before we wrap up here, quick couple of roster moves, I guess, if you want to call them. Byron Bell will be starting at right guard this weekend for the Bills, replacing, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Justin McCray. And then the Packers did also sign offensive lineman Anthony Coyle to the practice squad. I believe Coyle was on the team earlier this year. Again, I guess we are the offensive lineman experts, since that's how we did start our number one episode. But do you guys see this making any difference, short term or long term, or is it just a?
I mean, I don't love having McCray out and have, you know, the right side of the offensive line doesn't Spriggs over there if Bulaga can't go. Like, I don't love that. It's not great. Hopefully. McCarthy can remember that what they should be doing is a quick attack offense and getting the ball out quick so the guys aren't feasting on the right side of the offensive line. So fingers crossed that the guys get a little bit healthier on the right side of the offensive line. It's not great.
Now, that might explain the additional Coyle too, because they did like Anthony Davis. They gave him a $6,000 signing bonus as an undrafted free agent. He didn't last very long, though. Coyle, one of the guys that came in on Tuesday and just tried out, and they liked him enough to give him a spot on the practice squad. So, we may see more of the Fordham grad. Vince Lombardi went to Fordham, by the way, guys. I'm sure you knew that. But I just thought I'd mention that for everybody, that the two Packers fans listening that didn't know that. Just thought I'd bring
that
up.
That's a random fact to win a beer at a bar.
That is.
Mm-hmm.
Thank us when you get that trivia question right.
Yep.
I think that does it for us here for this week on Pack a Day podcast. Tweet at us your opinions, your questions, anything you want at Pack a Day podcast, or individually at Josh Circle, Steve Perhatch, or Trav _. Don't forget the _ knows. That's all here. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.